Conservative Theological University is offering courses of study leading to your certified AA through PhD, all online. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day, with the goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on three regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is also heard on these three stations in Jacksonville, Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and Brunswick, Georgia. Now there's a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. Your help is needed to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is crucial to take the next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com or to send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258, Attention Radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, among other things we're talking about today, we're talking about a demonic delusion that still prevails, and especially in the medical realm, and especially more specifically when it comes down to the COVID-19 vaccination and its efficacy. I am shocked. I am absolutely shocked and saddened to read major articles that says the American Academy of Pediatrics breaks with CDC and COVID vaccine recommendations. The recommendation by the American Academy of Pediatrics is that a child, a baby, 6 months old and older, must get the COVID vaccination, notwithstanding the proof, the evidence, the past history of the danger and the damage of the COVID vaccine and what it's done. I have on the line with me today a doctor that we've interviewed extensively, and he's published a book entitled Sanctioned, a COVID, the COVID Murders. Title of the book, Sanctioned, the COVID Murders. Dr. Sheftall, thank you for taking your time off the TCP course to come to the telephone and talk about this subject today for a moment.
Hi, Dr. Youngblood. How are you?
I'm doing great. I pray that you are.
Thank you very much. I would like to say a few things about this because, you know, when you're talking about injecting a six-month-old baby, these are people who cannot speak to defend themselves and they cannot walk. So we depend on their parents to protect them.
Yes.
And there are three reasons right up front not to get this vaccine. There's absolutely no reason to get it. Number one, there's no COVID-19 virus. There's no SARS-2 virus, which we talked about last week.
Yes.
But the other two reasons are reasons that might be easier for the public to understand. And one of them is there hasn't been enough time that's elapsed to know what the long-term side effects are. And so you would never inject anyone, especially a baby that can't defend itself, with something about which nothing is known of the long-term side effects. You just cannot justify it at all. And the third reason gets a little bit technical, and that is that the major histocompatibility complex, which doctors might recognize if they remember it from medical school, guarantees that the vaccines are going to damage the organs of the newborn babies. 6-month-old children, 50-year-old adults, and 80-year-old senior citizens. It damages the organs of every single person. And as I explained last week, of course, they're not effective at all because you're injecting the messenger RNA into the person's arm, which can only elicit a IgM or IgG response, and you need secretory IgA to keep the virus, if there was one, from getting in through the nose and mouth.
So what you're saying is
there's so many reasons not to do this, and there's absolutely no reason to be vaccinated. And so the American Academy of Pediatrics has been captured, I hate to say it this way, but in my opinion, by the pharmaceutical industry.
Yes.
And they're saying things that make no sense medically.
So if it is a matter of being, how would you say, subservient to the big farmer, and I believe you're exactly 1,000% correct, I would call it medical bootleggers, if I can use that term to illustrate, for any physician to take the position that because big pharma's going to pay me, and as you and I both know, and you might want to articulate this for just a few moments for our listeners, that during the apex, during the height of COVID, physicians were paid to recommend the vaccination, to give the vaccination, to do other things. Tell our listeners about the pay for play.
That is correct. In my book, for example, I reprinted a post by Thomas Massie, who is a representative from Kentucky, that the Ascension HMO had put out to their doctors. And basically what it was a payment schedule for bribing them to give the vaccine. Now, this is a serious thing. Mr. Massie is also an MIT grad like me. And so we take science very seriously, and he found a memo that explained how much the doctors would be making extra by vaccinating a certain percentage of the patients that were assigned to them. And it, if you multiplied the numbers out, it was an enormous amount of bonus money that year, on the order of $400,000 extra, which is disgusting and disgraceful, frankly. That the doctors would be not using their medical judgment to do something, but be basing their judgment on how much extra money they were going to make. But they were sort of caught red-handed here with the payment schedule. And I reprinted it in my book, for example, to show the horrible things that were going on behind the scenes about this vaccine. And again, it's Thomas Massie, who is a representative, so he's not a guy that just fell off the turnip truck either, as far as sticking his neck out and putting this HMO, putting their feet to the fire, as far as what they were willing to do, which is really upsetting, because, you know, the HMO is getting paid money to do this by Pfizer. And of course, Pfizer is getting paid by the United States government, and they're using taxpayer money. So the bottom line is that they were getting the public to pay for their own
demise,
injuries, and their own murder, if you will.
Yeah. Well, let's take a moment and digress from the thinking on that. Your book sanctioned the COVID murders.
Yes, sir.
Just give a little thumbnail sketch for our listeners to be intrigued by and challenged to go out to Amazon.com and buy that book. Why should they have it? What does it say? Well, give a little brief overview.
They need to find out what was actually done. And it's a book that's nonfiction. A lot of books written during the COVID era were fiction books, and a lot of them were written very early and are not accurate. This book is 2,000 pages long. I'm releasing it in 6 volumes. And the first volume proves that there's no virus existed, because there are 3 ways that virologists demonstrate the existence of a virus. And in this case, it failed on all 3 accounts. The pictorial evidence was inadequate, because even the Journal of Virology said you can't tell the difference between a viral particle and an exosome, which is a normal particle that's released when a cell dies. On the cytopathic effects, they failed, because we ran the same experiment without adding the human specimen. In other words, the cytopathic effects could not have possibly been caused by the virus. And then the third way that they demonstrate the existence of a virus is by sequencing its genome. And I explained in great detail last week when we were together that the genome depends on isolation of the virus, of course, because you have to know that the RNA that you're using to assemble the genome is coming from the SARS-2 virus. And there's no way to tell whether it's coming from a human's RNA, which is most of it in the specimen that they get from a human. It's mostly human RNA, but there could be, theoretically, if virus existed, viral RNA in there and bacterial RNA and fungal RNA. But the method that they use to isolate the RNA cannot distinguish from its source, either from humans, viruses, bacteria, or fungi, because it uses a tool called a ultracentrifuge, which I know from physics. I was a physics major. Separates things based on density. And, of course, all the RNA sources are of the same density because they use the same nucleotides. So this whole business of sequencing the virus is ridiculous. The only thing they came up with was a best guess sequence, which only exists in silico, meaning in a computer, the same way that, say, Homer Simpson is an in silico person. He may cry like a person. He may flap his arms like a person, but he is not a person.
Yeah.
He is an in silico human being, if you will. And so the virus genome is just as much a best guess genome as Homer Simpson is a best guess person, if you will.
Very well stated. So, Dr. Sheftall, your book is entitled Sanctioned, The COVID Murders. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot for a moment, and then I know okay. You're very busy and you've taken a moment from golfing to be here with us on the phone today. But why do you call it the COVID murders?
Well, because these vaccines were designed to kill. And what I mean by that is, The people, a lot of the doctors that might be listening now may not remember the major histocompatibility complex. But I can promise you that the vaccine designers know all about it. Mm-hmm. And when you know that the major histocompatibility complex proteins are going to team with the CD8 T killer cells to destroy any cell that produces a foreign protein, just like these vaccines are designed to do. Remember, they're designed to make this spike protein. And the way it works is you get injected with lipid nanoparticles, and inside those lipid nanoparticles is the messenger RNA that translates into the spike protein. So every single cell that the lipid nanoparticles can get into, and believe me, it can get into all cells, because it does not require a receptor, like they said the virus required. Remember the ACE2 receptor?
Yes.
Remember all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, lipid nanoparticles don't require that because they're made out of lipids, as the name suggests, and the cell walls of the cells in our body are made out of lipids. So, as you know, like dissolves like. So the lipid nanoparticles can just meld with the cell wall of our cells and deliver the messenger RNA into the cells, and then that messenger RNA hijacks the replication machinery, meaning the ribosomes and the transfer RNA and all that, to make the spike protein inside the cell. And then the major histocompatibility complex that I keep referring to, that's hard to remember how it works because it was difficult even in medical school to understand it. The major histocompatibility complex process will have the peptides from that spike protein, and peptides, by the way, are just small pieces of the protein. Those peptides get presented on the surface of the cell that produced them in the context of the class 1 major histocompatibility complex proteins, and that is recognized by the CD8 T killer cells, and those CD8 T killer cells will destroy the cells making the foreign proteins. Now, ordinarily, that's a great system because it's the way we surveil against cancer. All of us have had cancer in our lives, probably many, many times, but cancers produce foreign proteins too. And this is the body's way of destroying cancer cells because they make foreign proteins. But when you inject a vaccine that is designed to make foreign proteins, then it's murder, because you know that some of those cells are going to get destroyed. And by the way, the lipid nanoparticles go all over the body. So this destroys cells in our brains, our kidneys, our liver, our vascular endothelium, causing clots to form, which you remember was a big part of this.
Yes.
all of this happens, and it was all designed. So that's why I call it murder. Now, it's a term, I don't know if I invented it, but I have promoted it a lot, and I probably might have invented it because I'd never heard it before, but I call it stochastic murder. And stochastic murder occurs when you know that a scheme going in is going to kill a certain percentage of the population, but you don't know precisely which people will die from it. Mm-hmm. Stochastic is a mathematical term. That means it's something that can be analyzed statistically, but not predicted precisely. That's what stochastic means. So this is stochastic murder. And so I think the perpetrator should be prosecuted for it.
I'm in full agreement with it.
Because they certainly knew what they were doing.
And so, Doctor, one of the things I want our listeners to understand, your book, Sanctioned, can be gotten at Amazon.com. Subtitle of that is The COVID Murders. One other question before I let you go, Doctor. I'm looking at a headline that says, COVID boosters increase influenza-like illnesses and a high risk, according to a new Swiss study, and the feds cling to the mRNA. And then another headline, secret data. How Dr. Fauci and the deep state suppressed intel and historic deception about COVID. Now, with those two statements, how do you view that? We've already talked about it, and your book discusses that and sanctioned the COVID murders that can be gotten at Amazon.com, that you've already discussed it's murders, it kills, and now COVID boosters increase. Now, you know, during the height of COVID, not only Fauci was saying you need to get the shot, then you need a booster, and the booster needs a booster, and those boosters need another booster. I think it was up to about three or four boosters at the time. And now, according to the latest Swiss studies, they point out that it causes major risk of other influenza-like illnesses and even death. And then to find out that Fauci and the deep state suppressed it, and I've read the article. It says that he knew information even before President Trump went into office, and he failed to tell Trump, and Trump therefore believed the lie and carried forth with pushing for the fast track of the vaccination. Now, I know that's a convoluted question, but the bottom line is, for the listener, what should we do? How should parents respond? What should parents say to their pediatrician?
They should say, do you know what the major histocompatibility complex is? That's the first thing they should ask the pediatrician. And if the pediatrician does not know what that is, then they either never learned it or have forgotten it since medical school. But that's the key issue here. The cells of the newborn baby, the six-month-old baby, are going to be destroyed by that process. That's how we surveil against cancer, when it saves our lives. But when it's there just to destroy cells, because they made the foreign spike protein, then it's working against us. That's number one. But number two, as I've said all along and is explained in great detail in my book, in the first volume of the book even, and again, there's six volumes in that book. It's 2,000 pages long, but the first volume is only 300 pages, and I hope people will get it and read about it. They really need to know what was done to them. But it's explained in great detail in there exactly how all of this stuff happens. Again, there's no way you can even justify blaming the public for being tricked into taking this vaccine, but they never should have taken this thing. The data from the trials was fudged. We even caught them taking patients from the control group and putting them in the treated group, because the control group had more had fewer symptoms than the treated group. In other words, getting the vaccine was worse than not getting anything in the trials. But they moved patients from the control group over to the treated group. I mean, it was unbelievable what went on during this thing. And by the way, we're talking about pediatrics today.
Yes.
And the data that came out in the pediatric trials, you know, the trials on young children, did not in any way justify approving this thing. It absolutely did not justify it. If you look at the data, the trials that came out, and a lot of people, you know, don't know how to read that kind of stuff, and I understand that, but just take it from an MIT physics major. This stuff did not justify approving these things for the public, and yet they approved them anyway. The FDA did. And the leaders of the FDA should be prosecuted too.
Dr. Seftal, there's an even deeper and broader question that I wrap up with. If that is all that you've said is true, and I believe it, if the book sanctioned the COVID murders at Amazon.com, available, I'm praying the people buy the book, read the book.
No, they have to buy and read this book.
I'm passionate about it.
It is the definitive truth about what happened to them.
But you know the deceit that went out, that the kids, the children, the boys and the girls were carriers, and they were carrying it and would kill grandma and grandpa. Speak to that very quickly before we finish.
Okay, they were not carriers. They did not kill grandma and grandpa. The only thing that killed grandma and grandpa is the vaccine, not the virus. The virus didn't even exist. Pastor Youngblood, they have not isolated a single virion, which means viral particle, from a single person anywhere in the world at any time for SARS-2. They've never, ever isolated a particle. And this is from a disease that they claimed was very contagious, meaning you would have to be exhaling millions and millions of particles per breath to infect so many people so quickly. The entire scheme of telling the public that all these cases were occurring was all made up. There weren't any cases of SARS-2. And if there really was a contagious virus, it would have been very, very easy to get a photograph or isolate the virus particles. If it's making you sick enough to die, your lungs should be teeming with particles. And there weren't any particles found.
All right, explain that now to our listeners. I know where you're going.
Okay.
But to get used to
this. I want to explain this because I want to give you the answer that the virologist gave when people like me complained about it. In other words, if you can't isolate a single virus particle, then what's making us sick? What's killing us?
Yes.
You know, you'd have to be overwhelmed by something to kill a human, an adult or child human being. We're big animals, and you have to really destroy a lot of our cells for us to die. And so they've got people dying of COVID-19 when they couldn't even find a single particle. So we asked the virologists, we said, what's going on with that? What is actually killing the people if we can't find a single viral particle in them? And they said, oh, well, they're inside the cells. You can't find them because they're in the cells. And then I said, well, how could it be contagious then? They've got to be cut loose from the cell to be exhaled out into another person. And they didn't have an answer for that. They just had no answer for that one.
Well, the bottom line is just as you said, and I believe in our previous interview, you talked about the fact that more people died from the vaccination than died from so-called COVID. Explain that quickly and also
give
the comparison for our listeners that all of a sudden when COVID supposedly hit the scene, that influenza dropped dramatically from,
yes,
I believe,
let
like
me
30.
Tell you that real quickly.
All right.
Yeah, because this is key to the whole thing. In 2019, there were 38 million influenza cases. In 2020, there were only 1,500 in the whole world deaths from influenza. That's a reduction of a ratio of 25,333 to 1. Now, do you know how many COVID deaths there were in 2019? Zero, of course. In 2020, guess how many there were? 32 million. According to the experts, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, all of those 38 million got rebranded as COVID-19. That's why all of a sudden there's 32 million COVID-19 deaths when there were 38 million influenza deaths the year before. You follow me? In other words, they just rebranded it into COVID-19 without any justification for it at all. And then you had one more thing. You always ask me two questions at once, and I forget the second one. What was the second one?
Well, the other was, if there was no COVID, as you said, and it was all the influenza that was rebranded,
then
as a result of that, all of the deaths where it should be considered a purposeful mass genocide. Dr. Weiss with the hospital, an extension of Yale University, I forgot the name of the hospital, said in March of 2020, and 2 weeks later he was dismissed because he said it was mass genocide. Then
yeah,
what?
But here's the thing. He is a little bit off, and let me tell you why. People that would have died of influenza still died in 2020. They just called it COVID-19.
Yes.
What killed the people purposely was the vaccine.
Yes.
Now, it wasn't the virus. There was no SARS-2 virus. It's just when somebody died of influenza and some other diseases, they called it COVID-19. Now, there were some purposeful deaths that I call murder, and that is the nurses in the nursing homes especially and in the hospitals were afraid to go into the rooms of so-called COVID patients because those patients were supposed to be very, very contagious. And the nurses, frankly, were subject to the propaganda also, and they were scared to go into the rooms of the patients. And so a lot of those patients died of dehydration and starvation, because they wouldn't let the family go in the rooms either. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay, so those patients, those older, elderly people were lying in their hospital bed and didn't get enough water. They didn't get enough IVs changed properly. They didn't get enough nourishment, meaning food, and they died. And some of them got heart arrhythmias and died because they were dehydrated. Now, but the large majority was a rebranding of other diseases. Now, as you know, they were put on ventilators also, which was totally not indicated, and they died from being on the ventilator. You've heard about that, of course.
Absolutely.
And why were the doctors putting them on ventilators? Well, the hospitals were getting $38,000 per patient, and they were being paid to be put in the ICU, too, and to call it a COVID-19 case. There was all sorts of bribery going on to the hospitals. And I know that because the hospitals had their most profitable year in 2020 and 2021. Can you believe it?
Absolutely. In fact,
Ascension Hospital, by and large, were empty.
Yes, Ascension Hospital
Group.
So how could
they have had their most profitable year?
Yeah, Ascension Hospital Group across America had a 571% increase in net profit in that 1 year.
And the Ascension Group is the group that Dr. Massey found the internal memo on how they are bribing their doctors to vaccinate their patients.
Yes. So, Dr. Sheftall, let me say this once again. Our time is gone for today, but your book, Sanctioned, The COVID Murders, can be gotten at Amazon.com. I highly recommend the book. And, Dr. Sheftall, thank you for taking time to spend with us today to clarify some things for our listeners, especially about this with the pediatrics now wanting to put the needle in a 6-month-old child. Dr. Sheftall, thank you so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295, FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You're invited to worship with First Conservative Baptist Church. A reminder, CTU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. Tune in tonight at 11 for a replay of today's Let's Face the Issues broadcast on WBOB AM 600 and 1-